VentureCast.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
On this episode of Missing the Point, we're joined by longtime New England Patriots beat writer for the Boston Herald, Karen Garigian. We'll talk to Karen about Cam Newton's return to the Patriots and the Patriots' expensive offseason, how beat writers have had to adjust to storytelling during the pandemic, and we'll also discuss the release and retirement of Julian Elbin. This is Missing the Point, episode 54, but it's all relative.
Welcome to Missing the Point. I am your host, Michael Marcangelo, joined by Joe Malkin, and today we have a very special guest. She has covered all the local sports teams, including the Red Sox, Bruins, and Patriots for the Boston Herald since 1984. She has also covered two Winter Olympics, along with men's and women's professional golf, tennis, and soccer. She is currently working as the featured Patriots beat columnist. Please welcome from the Boston Herald, Karen Garigian. Thank you so much for taking the time and welcome to the show.
No, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We are super excited. Obviously, this offseason has been one of the most notable in Patriots history, or at least recent Patriots history. So we want to talk a little bit about that, the draft, then obviously the big news with Julian Edelman being cut and retiring. But I think we'd like to start first with just the offseason. You know, they spent a ton of money this offseason to acquire, you know, Hunter Henry, Jonnu Smith, Nelson Agholor, Matt Judon, Jalen Mills, Kendrick Bourne. The list goes on. It's very unpatriot-like. So just based off of your experience with this team, was Belichick forced to do this in the offseason because of how last year went?
Forced might be strong. But I think Tom Brady leaving and winning, although they will never admit it, played a little bit of a factor. Going 7-9 and missing the playoffs was another factor. And the third factor, I think, is the fact that they haven't really done well in the draft. And the draft is your lifeblood. And it's the thing that kind of helps you keep on with sustained success like the Patriots have had for two decades. Although some people like to argue if you have Tom Brady, it doesn't matter who you have around you, but it does. So they've botched a few drafts, and basically the roster that they had last year had a ton of holes with it. And so they really acknowledged such and reloaded, and they had the money to do it. That was the other thing.
Last year was such a strange year for this team for a lot of reasons, right? So Tom Brady, the cornerstone of the franchise, leaves for Tampa, as we mentioned, and we've mentioned so many times in the show. Mike and I go back and forth on that constantly, even when we're not on the show. And then they take a long time to bring in a quarterback. They bring in Cam Newton, who we know is damaged goods at the time that he was signed. He comes in and at the beginning of the season, it didn't look like a 7-9 season, right? I mean, Edelman had a career game against Seattle. Cam Newton looked great against Seattle. And it really looked like things were clicking. And then the COVID bug hit. And Cam went down and Julian went down with an injury. You mentioned them going 7-9 last year was a part of that. But knowing the kind of year it was going to be going in, would you say that they kind of knew what they were going to be getting into? And going 7-9 with that roster, was there any satisfaction in that?
Well, there's a couple of things. I don't know if, obviously, the pandemic came and they also lost eight players.
Right.
Which was the most any other team had in the league. But just getting back to your point, you know, my understanding is that, you know, Coach Belichick wanted to move on from Tom Brady, not just this past year, but several years before. And, you know, his initial plan was Jimmy Garoppolo, but you couldn't dump Tom Brady when he's winning you Super Bowls. So the thing that surprised me the most was the most prepared guy in the business wasn't prepared for Tom Brady's departure. And it's not like, you know, whether you think it's, you know, between his age and the fact that Belichick was trying to push him out the door, the fact that they were kind of so ill prepared for it actually really stunned me. But getting back to the record in 7-9 and with the roster and the quarterback and COVID, that was probably a good record for that team.
Yeah, I was going to say, in reality, it just looked a lot worse than it, I guess, it actually was, right? I mean, because 7-9, with what they had on the field at times, their defense was not that bad, especially when they had all those people out. You would have thought it would have been a little bit worse. So, you know, a lot of fans, I myself included, believe that Belichick went into that season just thinking that no one would be as prepared for everything else as he would. And that's normally the case. So seeing how that played out, was that another reason why he went and maybe overspent for some players this offseason because he didn't want to get caught off guard again?
Perhaps. But I also think there's an owner in there who wasn't very happy.
Yeah.
And I mean, we heard it from him a few weeks back when he, you know, spoke to the media after the league meetings. I think it was like the first week of April. Yeah. And, you know, he pointed out that it was a horrible feeling, basically how the season went, how it ended, having a losing season. And he also pointed to failed drafts. So, you know, if the owner's not happy, it gets back to the head coach without question.
It was one of those things where we finally saw, after 20 years, two decades of success, as you mentioned, Karen, we finally saw Robert Kraft call out Bill Belichick really in his own way. And to that end, we saw a lot of personnel moves, not just players, but also in the front office. Nick Caserio departs for Houston, which sounds like he's having an interesting time down there right now. They bring in Dave Ziegler, or keep Dave Ziegler on as the director of player personnel, de facto GM. Matt Patricia comes back as a scout. Thank goodness he won't be on the sideline, but we'll get to that in a few minutes as well. These moves were made in the front office. And then Robert Kraft also mentioned that there's been a change in philosophy. And Bill Belichick kind of fielded a question in his press conference today about that. And he seemed to stumble over his words. And almost to me, this was my personal feeling, is that he did not seem happy with the way it's gone. But he also kind of had a little bit of resolve in his voice that he kind of understands that's what needs to happen because of all the things that Robert pointed out. So keeping Dave Ziegler on as the director of player personnel, keeping him from going to Denver, are we seeing that in front of our eyes, that relief of power from Bill Belichick, but taking the pressure off of him a little bit as the GM and letting other personnel in the front office make decisions?
You know, I'll believe that when I see it. I really will. You know, Bill can delegate, but he still has the final say over every decision. It's not like he's going to be letting Dave Ziegler make the decision on the first draft pick. Basically, Bill gets all the information and then decides for himself, either based on what his scouts and people are telling him. But he also likes to chat with his friends in the coaching community. And I mean, other decision makers do the same thing. Why wouldn't you call Nick Saban to try and get a scouting report, not only on Alabama players, but players that Saban has gone against? And it just might be that Belichick has relied a little too much on that type of information. But here's the other. I think the bigger picture issue here is, and maybe Belichick also realized this, when you have a Tom Brady for a quarterback, or at least for the majority of the two decades he was under center, he could cover up for a lot of the bad drafts and the bad signings and
bad play calling,
bad everything. I mean, he was the biggest wart, coverer of them all, because they could still win because they had him. They could still win with him with junk receivers. As he got older, that changed a little bit. He could no longer be that kind of Superman who fixed everything. So why did they reload all across the board? Because I almost think, I could be wrong, I think Coach Belichick wants to win in spite of the quarterback. That
we've heard a lot, especially in this area over the last 20 years, that Coach Belichick must really have to overperform because of the underperformance of GM Belichick, right? And it feels like this year they're trying to he's trying to close that gap a little bit, and he filled all the holes that were apparent to us. Mm-hmm. Would you say, seeing as you've been around the team since, 1984.
100 years, yes.
Yeah.
Long before Belichick.
Yeah. That's right. Is it fair to say that this is the most important offseason that you've experienced in Bill Belichick's time here?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, he's had a couple where he literally had to go get Brady some weapons. At one point, the Randy Moss year, Moss, Welker, et cetera. But the standard here, though, is so different than anywhere else.
Yeah.
I mean, the expectation with or without Brady is they're going to contend and be in the Super Bowl. And when you fall short, I mean, people used to get upset if they didn't either get to the Super Bowl or get into the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Now it's like, oh my God, they can't even get into the playoffs. So again, the dynamics have changed a little bit, but as I said, they don't have the ultimate fixer-upper. And I don't want to diminish Belichick in this, because I think because of his coaching, I mean, they did get 7 wins,
right,
in spite of themselves. So when you have the greatest coach on the sideline, now I guess he thinks I better get some actual talent around me so we can do more.
Yeah, that 07 offseason that you just brought up, it's the first thing that I thought about. But then I stepped back and I said, well, they were in the AFC title game the year before. He retooled just to get to the Super Bowl, right?
Correct.
Now he has to retool just to stay maybe relevant in a division that is moving exponentially up the ladder more than it has in the last 20 years.
That's a great point, Mike, because they could get away with having mediocre teams and Tom, because they would always win the division and they could win it in their sleep. But finally, Buffalo's woken up, Miami's getting there. And I still think the Jets are below, but with a new coach, a new quarterback, a new everything, maybe. Well, we'll see if they blow it with the second pick, but they tend to blow it, but they could be up and coming as well. So it's not the cupcake or lollipop division, or as Dan Shaughnessy would say, tomato can division that they've been used to in the past. I mean, they're going to have to work to win.
So working to win brings up a really good question here, right? Because we just talked about how they lost the quarterback, and you're right. Bill was trying to rid himself of Tom since he drafted Jimmy. And when he did do that, everyone was a little surprised. And then, of course, you can't just keep the 25-year-old quarterback until the ageless wonder decides to retire. But now they're in a situation where they have Cam Newton, who Mike and I both believe will be better this year just by the property of the fact that, well, he's probably not going to catch COVID, knock on wood, not going to catch COVID this season. They put actual weapons around him. They've really retooled the defense. They're going to have a lot of those guys back, of course, with the loss of Chung on the defensive side. But is Cam Newton a starting quarterback for the New England Patriots in your mind, in your opinion? And can he get them back to the playoffs this season?
I think he will be, for a couple of reasons. One, I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo is headed this way, at least this year. Although we'll see. We'll see how if the 49ers come down on their asking price. And number two, if the Patriots draft a quarterback, that quarterback, it's doubtful he'll just step right in. Plus, Bill Belichick is loath to play rookies, much less a rookie quarterback. So I see it as being Cam's offense to run. And I agree. I can't see him being worse than last year. And with time, with the time he's had to understand the playbook more, one, two, I know for a fact he's been working on his footwork, which was a mess. His mechanics were a mess last year. But again, with COVID and with the situation and the guidelines, it was hard for the Patriots to say, to try and fix all that. They were trying to teach him the playbook. So he's working to try and get his mechanics back. Again, his shoulder bothers me because of the bounced passes, all the bounces we saw. I don't know if you can fix that, but if Cam is better, they will be better.
Well, as Mike has said, he still accounted for 20 touchdowns, 8 passing, and 12 rushing.
Yeah,
and that's... if he doesn't have the COVID game and he plays better with the weapons around him, he could have 8 more touchdowns, which could mean 3 to 4 more wins. It's basically Mike paraphrased.
Well, yeah, I mean, my back was against the wall there, and I don't need to embarrass myself further, but Cam almost has to start though, right? Like unless you know you can get a Justin Fields or you know a Trey Lance, but.
I was going to say, time out. What about Jarrett Stidham? You're forgetting about good old Jarrett.
How do you feel about good old Jarrett Stidham? Now we're going to ask that question. How do you feel, Karen?
Well, I want to hear your thoughts on that. But if Bill were to start anybody but Cam after spending upwards of $150 million this offseason, if Cam winning 11 games, doesn't that validate the spending?
Yeah, and guess what? I actually... looking at the schedule, which isn't too tough.
Yeah.
I picked out 11 wins, and that's with Cam as the quarterback. So it could be more. I mean, it's not the toughest. They're playing a third place schedule, basically.
Right.
And there are some tough games in there. But again, I came out with 11 wins with Cam throwing the football. So that should tell you a lot.
To that end, too, you know what I see here, and I'm thinking of it as we're talking about this, but this is a perfect situation for Bill almost to draft a quarterback, not bring Jimmy back, although Jimmy was supposed to be his guy, right? But this is a good situation because he's only got Cam for another year. You draft that guy, and now he has the keys to the car, where he's not waiting for Mr. Tom Brady, 6-time Super Bowl winning quarterback, to walk out the door. He can just say, Cam, hey, that's going to do it, and this kid, you know, this kid's taking over, and now he's got his guy for the future.
Yeah, and with Cam being kind of such a good soldier, and I do think he's a good soldier, I would watch for the Patriots drafting someone more like him than Tom Brady. And by that, I mean a mobile-type quarterback. Because, again, if they're they're not changing up the whole offense, but they're making it more suitable, or they tried at least last year to make it more suitable to Cam. And I'm sure they're going to do even more things to make it suitable for a mobile running quarterback. So why would you draft the future and have him be a pocket passer?
Sure. Yeah.
That's just, again, I'm just trying to think logically.
You mentioned them trying to put the tools around Cam for it to be an offense more around him. And I have my own personal thoughts on Josh McDaniels. But in terms of the play calling and the personnel, does this team that they're putting around Cam remind you at all of the teams that Ron Rivera built around him in Carolina?
A little bit. I mean, because they had a great tight end. I don't know if they had two great tight ends, but they had their speed guy and they had a really good tight end outlet. I mean, it's a little mindful of, for me, the Ravens' current offense, right? With the mobile Lamar Jackson, who are his favorite receivers, the two tight ends. They do have a speed guy as well, But it's run first, smash mouth, throw to the tight ends, and basically bully everybody down the field. It's bully ball. And the Patriots have a great offensive line, in my view. And that's where it starts. And again, if you try and not force Cam to throw the ball 30 times, you're going to win games with him throwing the ball 20 times and then running it maybe 30 to 40 times a game.
He just needs to hold on to the football.
Yeah, just hold on to it. So you brought up bully ball, and I never really thought about this too, because when you think about last year, they had all of the tools in place to be that ground and pound offense, right? But in the red zone, they had no one to bring in the football, right, to catch it. They had no real target. So now,
right,
for someone who, again, who's covered the team for a very long time, right, how – I'm trying to figure out how to ask this question. I'm having a Joe Malkin moment over here. What's the ceiling for this red zone offense, in your opinion?
Oh, I think it multiplied, because obviously there was only one way they were to get the ball in last year, and that was running it. Because defenses knew it. Seattle knew it when they stopped Cam on the goal line. If you know you're not going to pass the ball because you have no targets or no viable guys, why bother? But now defenses are going to have to pay attention to those tight ends. They're going to have to pay attention to Aguilar. They're going to have to play a lot more honest as opposed to stuff in the box. So I think exponentially they'll be better in the red zone. Just for the fact that they have a couple people now that defenses are going to have to keep their eye on, as opposed to Cam and the running backs.
It's a great point. Now, before we move on to the draft, what are your thoughts on Jarrett Stidham? Because did you lose faith after the Kansas City game?
In him or Hoyer or both?
Oh, yeah, but well, Hoyer's gone, right? But
yeah.
Stidham, I mean, what a deflating experience if you're a fan of Stidham, right?
Well, the whole Stidham experience has been odd.
Yeah.
Because when Brady left, it was put out that Stidham was the guy. He was the guy. He was going to, yeah, they were pumping him up like, you know, we're all set. Don't worry. Stidham, Stiddy, come on, Stid the kid. He's going to be the guy. And then at some point during the off season, when he was off at weddings or whatever on the weekend, he kind of fell out of favor. And that's when they put on the full court press to get Cam at the last minute. So again, they see him in practice every day. We don't get to see, and especially last year, we didn't really get to see much. So something must have changed their outlook and thinking about him. And I think you saw it when he played. Obviously, he can throw the ball. He threw the ball better than Cam.
Yep.
But again, it's all quarterback isn't just throwing the football. It's decision making.
Yeah.
And he was hesitant, and he wasn't always getting rid of the ball in that rapid kind of fashion. Does that mean it'll never happen? I don't know. It takes some quarterbacks time. But it just seems that the Patriots have moved past him.
It's so interesting because we talk about Stidham and Cam Newton when he came in. I was high on Cam when he came in because he has been a very good quarterback. He's always been a good soldier. He's a great football player. Let's just put it out there. Like, he's an incredible athlete. He's a beast of a human being. And they, you know, we've had guys like Jimmy Garoppolo come in. They drafted Ryan Mallett, you know, early on in the early 2010s, thinking he was going to be the next guy after Brady. Again, who would have known that Tom Brady would just stick around for so long? And so many people want that guy that's just going to step in and be the next Brady. And we hear that so often. But what people don't realize is that Tom Brady was drafted and sat behind four guys.
Yeah.
He was the fourth guy. He was sitting up in a box in 2000, and he was behind John Freeze and Damon Heward. And when he came in, I remember I was at the game. He came in when Mo Lewis knocked Drew Bledsoe out of the game. And as much as we want a guy like Brady who's going to step in and be great, it took him a while to get there to that NFL level. It took him a year of being the number four quarterback. And now we look at Jarrett Stidham. I almost see them on two opposite ends of the spectrum because I think it's taken Stidham too long and Tom did it in a very short period of time. So to me, fans have to realize it's not just going to happen overnight and it may not be that next guy. We may have to deal with a year, another year, I say deal with it as if I'm dismissing him, but Cam's going to be better this year. But people, if they do draft a quarterback, they're going to have to wait a year more of Cam before we see that guy.
Let me just flat go back because you've made me think of something interesting. Yeah, Brady was one of four quarterbacks, I believe. Yep. But if you talk to or go back and read reports coming out of that training camp, there were a lot of stories. All right, so you had Bledsoe and two Heward and who else was there?
I think it was John Freeze.
John Freeze or whatever. I think there might have been five. But anyway, most of the reporting that was coming out of training camp was that Brady was the best quarterback on the field day in and day out. And the people who covered the Patriots then weren't like totally shocked. That's who Belichick went to when Bledsoe was blown up by Mo Lewis. But obviously, he was a game manager, or they had him basically manage and not make mistakes that first year. And then gradually they gave him more run of the offense. But it did take a while before Brady wasn't that game manager type. So it'll be the same thing with a rookie coming in.
So, Mike, I have to correct this there. It was Drew Bledsoe was the number one, and then it was Michael
Bishop. Yeah.
That's it. Yep.
Look, I think it's fair to say that Bledsoe, Brady was not only the best quarterback on the field during that time, but he also gained, as you said, Belichick's trust because he would go out there and not lose you a game. Bill can't say that about Stidham now. We saw it. He can make those intermediate passes between the 20s, but in the red zone, he just doesn't have it.
Could you see him? Here's the best case in point. With a minute left on the clock in the Super Bowl, moving them into field goal range like Brady calmly did that year. Right? No, you can't.
No.
So, and that's the difference.
That's what I mean is it's just taking Stidham longer. And again, we don't need the next Tom Brady because the next Tom Brady may never come along. We may never see that ever again.
He's in Kansas City.
Yeah. Well, that's the first the second Patrick Mahomes. But that was that Super Bowl 36 drive where he brought the team down the field to get in field goal range for that 48-yarder from Adam Vinatieri game I was at. Still brings me a tear to my eye and chills to my bones to this day. That was the second greatest drive of his career, and the first was the final drive against Atlanta to win the game in the Super Bowl and the comeback. But you're absolutely right. Stidham is never – I don't think he's ever going to be that guy. And I think I would much rather Cam Newton with a minute left in the Super Bowl than Jarrett Stidham.
Yeah. Because, again, Newton has limitations now, but he still has that savvy and he's a veteran and he's not intimidated by the moment. Let me put it that way. Hey, he wasn't intimidated coming in replacing the greatest of all time. He welcomed it. And that's why I thought he was like a great last minute choice because Newton isn't phased. So what? He had all due respect to Brady, but Brady's Brady. Cam, I wear a cape too. And he was ready to go. But again, the circumstances weren't conducive to him being successful. And that was right from jump, coming in the 1st of July and trying to learn a complex offense with no real offseason, no offseason games, and then getting COVID after week 3 or 2 or whatever it was. And it just, he had little to no chance of being really successful.
Before we move on to the draft, I want to make another or ask another question to that and see what you think from kind of more of the inside. Did those same factors affect Josh McDaniels? the same way?
Well, I think it had to, because basically he went back to what everyone called the high school offense. I mean, they couldn't do most of the things that they usually do. It was just too complex and complicated for Cam to get in a moment's notice almost. So he had to really go to the basic of basics. And Cam even said it when he came back from COVID, it's like they had moved ahead and he was still behind.
Yeah.
So it was just hard for it all to jive.
One last question before we move to the draft, because now with all this, Cam is not going to be as bad talk. I want to fast forward a year, right? Let's say that the Patriots go 13-4. They don't win a Super Bowl. Cam does well, and they draft a quarterback this year. What do you do? Do you keep Cam?
You might.
That could be a world they live in, right?
Except here's the difference. He's going to cost more.
Yeah.
He's going to cost a lot more. I mean, the thing that made him attractive now, A, was the cost, and he actually knows the system better than somebody who would be coming in fresh, even though he still is technically learning the system.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always interested me, is because now, again, it's like GM Bill and Coach Bill are not really working in unison, right? Because if they improve the team around Cam so much that his performance improves and they don't draft the right guy, then we're doing this all over again next year.
Yeah.
That they don't have the solution. So that moves us to this year's draft. The Patriots had the number 15 overall pick. Do you think that they will move up to reach for a quarterback, maybe 9 or 10 for Justin Fields if he falls? Or are we going to see what we usually see out of Bill in the first round? And either it's a defensive player or they trade out of the first for 3 seconds.
My gut tells me that they will pick a defensive player, and only because the really good ones are going to, I mean, they're in a rare spot at number 15. While it's not good to get the best quarterbacks, it's good to perhaps land a franchise type cornerback, linebacker, defensive lineman. And that's Bill's wheelhouse.
Right.
Quarterback is not his wheelhouse, even though he did snag Brady in the sixth round. That's what my gut tells me. But again, he just spent over $300 million for, again, that I wasn't so much surprised by him spending. It was how much he spent. And my jaw actually dropped day two. Like, he gets Jonnu Smith day one, and then the first thing you hear day two, they sign Henry too. And I'm going, oh my head, you know, I mean, but you know what? They had a plan. They had players they wanted, and they just meticulously went about landing them. If they didn't land one, they just moved to the next guy. Boom, boom. And I mean, that's great. They had a plan. I hope they have a similar plan with the draft. And I would hope that they have a plan for the quarterback. So, I mean, if that's the case, maybe they do move up to 8 or 9 or somewhere where they can get somebody. But I don't think they're going to push it or force it.
For what it's worth, and Joe, I'm sorry to cut you off here. I'm never the one to do this, but Belichick has actually done pretty well with quarterbacks when you think about it, right? Brady, Castle, Brissett, Garoppolo. He hasn't really – well, he has missed a lot too, but I think his worst area of drafting – I'd be really interested to hear your perspective, Karen – is wide receiver.
Oh,
I mean,
easy.
I mean, it's not close.
Yeah.
What, Chad Jackson wasn't an all-pro wide receiver?
Dobson, Kendrell Tompkins. It's not great.
Yeah. I mean, and his best receiver that he drafted was a quarterback. So, yep. Edelman.
Yep.
So – I mean, I'll take that back. He also did draft Deion Branch, and he was pretty good.
Pretty good.
But I think the it's tougher to draft receivers, and because of, again, the type of what they're expected to do. And there's a huge difference of what receivers do in college than what they are asked to do in the pros, particularly in a Patriots offense. You're not just running down the field when you're a receiver. I mean, that is so not the job. If it was, they would have lots of talented players, but the receiver really has to be in sync with the quarterback. They have to read the defense. They have to know where everyone is and where everyone's going. And if they see something with the defense that the quarterback sees, they have to know to go to what spot to negate that type of defense. Like the play just blows up in smoke and they go to another spot. So there's actually some thinking and intelligence involved, and that's not everyone's cup of tea. I mean, you can have the greatest athlete at receiver, and they can run a 4.2 or 3 and zip down the field. But what good is it if, again, you're not on the same page with the quarterback? So there's a lot more to it. The trouble is, even in a great wide receiver draft, they seem to draft the wrong guy.
Yeah, sure, right. N'Keal Harry, we could have had DK Metcalf instead. But that brings up a good point, because as bad as he's been at drafting wide receivers, with that kind of analysis, you look at the receivers that he did draft, not the greatest guys of all time, the guys that he brought in. So he brought in Welker, he drafted Edelman, he drafted Branch, but he also had other guys. He drafted David Givens, Rishay Caldwell. They brought in guys over the years that were maybe smart.
Randy Moss. Randy Moss is one of the smartest receivers he's ever had. I mean, he picked up the playbook like that, and he got on the same page with Brady like that. But he, again, it's not street intelligence. It's football intelligence mostly, right. And being able to decipher what you're seeing from the defense, and also knowing that your quarterback is seeing the same thing, and you reacting accordingly. As I said, it's not just running down the field or running to a spot. It's being able to adjust based on what you see in front of you.
Which is why I believe that DK Metcalf is successful in Seattle and would not be successful here. And a lot of people are like,
you know, the best example I can give you of this, what a receiver is supposed to have in his brain. You remember the year that Edelman threw the pass to that play, Brady to Edelman to Amendola? That was in a playoff game. Week two, I think it was week two or three or whatever game they got blown out by Kansas City, in Kansas City, they called that play in the huddle, or it was sent in. Amendola, who was flanked out left, looked at the defense, and when Tom looked at Amendola waved it off and said, no, we can't run it. We can't do this. It won't work with the defense that they have. So no one ever saw that play for that reason.
Wow.
And so they kept it in the holster until the next important moment. And when against the Ravens, when Brady looked over, Amendola gave him the green light and said, yes, we can do this. They did it.
So Danny Amendola is the key to the Patriots offense, not Tom Brady. No, I'm not putting words in your mouth. But no, it's exactly right. And who would have thought that the two skater bros that were skating around Boston, Julian Edelman and Danny Amendola, would have been two of the smartest receivers he's ever played with? Which is amazing.
Earlier in his tenure here, I mean, they did that same thing against Indianapolis, right? It was Brady to David Patton to Troy Brown, and they did that a couple of times. Now, when you mentioned the smartest receiver that we've ever had here is Randy Moss, and I've heard that a lot. Conversely, Chad Ochocinco was
the polar opposite.
Right, but I mean, you were there. I heard he was a great practice wide receiver, but just couldn't do it on the field.
Well, I mean, when you're just running in practice, you look good. And again, but he was coming from an offense in Cincinnati where all they really wanted him to do was run down the field. Yep. go straight, take no detours, we'll hit you. Huh. When he came here and they told him all that was involved with being a receiver, aside from running down the field, I mean, it blew up his brain. Yeah.
Reggie Wayne had the same problem.
Yeah. And there was another receiver. I can't think of his name. I think he was a Ram, former Ram. And he was a speed guy, too. Great receiver.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. It was right after Josh came back here the second time around, right?
Yeah. And he just, again, a great receiver somewhere else.
Yeah.
He came here and it was rocket science trying to play receiver.
So you think it's going to be a defensive pick in the first round if they don't trade up to nine or 10?
I would, yeah. My guess is if they don't make that move for the quarterback, they will let the best defensive player they can get and take that guy at 15.
Will they still be drafting a quarterback in round two? Because they don't have a third rounder this year, right?
I'm guessing yes.
Yeah. So I would love Kyle Trask. I don't know if you're familiar with him. I think you're probably more familiar with him than I am.
Yep.
Doesn't he fit what they're building here too?
Except that he doesn't fit the Cam profile.
Right.
Yeah. He's not as mobile, right?
Nope.
Yeah.
You wouldn't run a mobile offense with him. I mean, he's a gunslinger. So
Sorry to cut you off. I was just thinking of the defensive player at 15. So let's say they don't trade up. I don't know if Denver is going to want to trade with them anyway, because Denver, I don't know, is Denver going to ride Drew Lock to a Super Bowl? Who knows? But when you look at the draft and you see the defensive players, you mentioned it a few minutes ago, that the good defensive players are going to sit there in the middle of the first round, because it's going to be quarterback and running back, wide receiver heavy in the top 10 to 12 picks. And then at 15, there's going to be a defensive player sitting there. Mike mentions drafting a quarterback in the second round. I'm with you. I think it's going to happen that they're going to take a quarterback with their second pick. Could you see them trading back into the first round around 24, 25, which is currently held by Pittsburgh, and the Jets have 23. Could you see them trying to trade back into that area, 23 through 25, to take a quarterback?
Yes, I could. Yep. And that way they can, hey, we get a first round quarterback. Yippee. Yep.
Well, you know, it goes to show, it'll be interesting to see who picks the quarterback. Let's say they take a defensive player at 15 and then trade back in. Who's going to have the most say? Like you said, Bill has the final say, but yeah. Will Josh get to pick his next guy? Because Josh famously drafted a quarterback number 25 while in Denver. Actually, was he drafted right before?
We know who that was.
Yeah, we know who that was. So one name I want to throw at you, because I've heard his name a lot lately, and he's actually in the top 10 quarterbacks in the draft. He's listed right below Kyle Trask. And this guy is listed as a quick decision maker with legs, kind of, but has off-platform accuracy, and that's Stanford quarterback Davis Mills.
Yep. Yeah, I've seen him linked to the Patriots as well. And again, for me, it depends on the best guy. And I don't know, I'm guessing it would have to be a style fit. Well, look what the NFL offenses are now. How many real pocket passes are there? So do you stay back or do you try and get with this century? What I'm really going to be interested in is if a quarterback drops and is available at 15, whether it's Ohio State kid, whether it's Justin Fields, whether it's Mac Jones, or whether it's the North Dakota kid. That's what I'm really going to be interested in, is if one of them is available and the Patriots don't have to move, do they jump on that guy right then, or do they go with defense?
Yeah, I guess I was going to say, gun to your head, if they have their best defensive personnel like pick right there, right, and they can get him, or they have someone that fell, and who knows why they fell at the quarterback position, based on everything that you've ever seen from them, what do you think he does?
Defense.
I think so, too.
He's never taken a quarterback in the first round. Not in Cleveland, not here. And again, it's interesting to try and figure out why that might be. Well, when you have Tom Brady, there's no real need.
Yep.
Right? But, and the closest he came was Jimmy Garoppolo in the second round, 62. 62 is the highest he's taken any quarterback ever.
So, let me throw this scenario at you. And it involves Jimmy Garoppolo, and this is why I bring it up here. You mentioned that you couldn't see him coming back, but that's been the rumblings everywhere that we could see Jimmy, that they're positioning to do that. Everybody's expecting if anything's going to happen, it's going to happen before the draft. Why not after the draft? If the 49ers go out and get their guy at number three after trading into that spot, which that was an amazing day of trading for the Miami Dolphins, but the 49ers made out well there too. They go and take their guy at number three. Who's to say they don't turn around and say, hey, we just got our guy at three. You know, give us a second rounder this year and a third rounder next year. You can have Jimmy. I mean, is that still something that's on the table?
Yeah, I think so. I think obviously the 49ers are holding out to get the most that they can. And I think because they surrendered every first round pick they had for the next couple years, if they can somehow get a first rounder back, then they get their quarterback and lessen the price they had to pay for him. If they get a first rounder back for Jimmy, they're going to hold out. Maybe they even hold out longer. Again, depending on how desperate another team might be. How desperate are the Patriots? Obviously, Belichick doesn't want to play that card. But if you think about it, if Belichick picks this future Pro Bowl defensive player at 15, gets what he wants in the draft, and then gives up his number one next year for Jimmy, I don't know. He might do that. I don't think he wants to do that, but I think he loves Jimmy.
Oh, he definitely loves Jimmy. Yeah. We all love Jimmy. And honestly, I think he's more attractive than Tom Brady. But that's just me.
Can I throw one more scenario?
Absolutely. Please.
What if the Patriots are figuring, or maybe the 49ers are true to what they say, and they want Jimmy to handle the duties one more year while they groom the next guy? Either he comes in week 10 or he doesn't come in at all. And maybe the Patriots will say, fine, we'll get him next year. So if the Patriots have that in their brain, that might also impact how they go about the draft. Just throwing that out there.
That's a dangerous line to walk though, don't you think? I mean, we would be relying on Jimmy G staying healthy this year and coming back here the year after and being the guy for our offense for, would you say, like 3 to 5 more years? And then you still have to figure this out, right?
When I say impact, that might sway them for moving up the board.
Okay.
But that wouldn't preclude them from taking Davis Mills in the second round or later, or Kellen Mond, or Kyle Trask.
Yep.
So you still have a future possibility, but you only have Cam for 1 year. If you get Jimmy the next year, see you, Cam. Hello, Jimmy. We got Jimmy's successor, right?
Karen, you're getting me too wound up here because now I'm thinking of all these scenarios where, you know, Cam comes in and they have a rookie quarterback, you know, depending on how the season's going, plays a few games in the second half of the year, but he knows that Jimmy's coming in next year. So it's just like, there's so many things. I'm looking at the draft board now and I'm like, man, the Patriots could trade away their second round pick and maybe a pick next year for, you know, San Francisco's 43rd and Jimmy. And so it's just amazing as you get into it and you really think about the scenarios. And what's going to happen is we're all going to be disappointed. No Jimmy, and Cam's the guy for the next 2 to 3 years.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far with Cam.
and again, I hope to one day have Cam on this podcast because I think he's great.
Yeah.
And he's a hell of a dresser too. But you're absolutely right about him. And I just think that this team can't go that long. And I think he knows it. I think he knows he's coming to the end too.
Well, but as I said before, if he somehow, if they have a 12-13 win season with him and do fairly well in the playoffs, again, he's a free agent. Do you think he's going to come back on a pay me nothing deal? No. Someone else going to want him.
Right. Yeah.
Well, there was those rumors already this offseason that Washington could have been in on him because Ron Rivera is there, and they were rumored to want to sign him for $25 million. Obviously, those rumors never really came to fruition because he came back here for $14 million, but it's an interesting situation with him too.
Yeah.
While we have you, Karen, I'd love to talk a little bit about some COVID era related things. The first thing that comes to mind is the Patriots joining a couple other teams and announcing that they will not be participating, or the players announcing they're not going to be participating in the voluntary workouts.
Most.
Yes. Not all.
Many, I think, was the word.
What do you think Belichick's reaction was to that?
Well, I don't think he would be happy, but there's still time because it's like the first, I mean, they technically start on the 19th, which is Monday.
Yep.
But the first few weeks are classroom anyway. They're not out on the field right away. So having guys not show up in the building isn't that much of a big deal. But it's when, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks down the road when they're actually have OTA, which is essentially a passing camp.
Yep.
It's at that point where push might come to shove. And again, because there's so many new players, 2 new receivers, 2 new tight ends, Cam still learning the offense, new defenses, the rookies who were clearly affected last year, Uche and Anthony Jennings, they need time on the field. So it's going to be very interesting to see how many of the many don't show up.
Yeah, I imagine Cam and every new offensive personnel they signed, they have to, I mean, they don't have to, but like Belichick's probably saying to himself, you have to be here. Well, I just went out and retooled this thing for you. We need time together.
Right. Hey, Hunter Henry, how much are we paying you?
Yeah, right.
Matt Judon, how much are we paying you? How much money did I throw down? How much did I guarantee? So, yeah, it's going to be interesting.
I wonder if those guys won't be part of the many, because we all know that Bill is a master contract formulator. And I'm sure that might have been worked into some of those guys' contracts, which brings up an interesting part of the contracts. Why is Matt Patricia's name on contracts the players are signing?
They have to give him something to do. It's a little signet. That's not hurting anyone, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, this is what we'll let you do. Go find us our next backup cornerback and put your name on the paper. That's funny.
Well, I think they're trying to rehabilitate and resuscitate him. I mean, obviously, the Detroit experience was a disaster. So I think, and I also think maybe talk about a smart guy. He's a smart guy. He is literally a rocket scientist. I mean, right. So maybe they're just working him in another area to see if he can use that rocket scientist brain of his and help.
I'm going to go ahead and jump the gun here, Joe and Craig, just before you guys do it. I picked the Detroit Lions last year to win the division in a draft in a selection show. I was wrong. I'm often wrong, but I didn't know if that was going to come up. So I wanted to get ahead of it with you, Karen. So don't judge me, right? We all make mistakes. In that question about Patricia signing contracts is an interesting question that I wish people would ask Belichick, which brings me to my next one. How hard is it to ask the questions that you would normally be able to ask in a press room? Virtually now, like how has the Zoom changed the way in which you get the information that you need to write a story?
Well, we got hammered, the media, on some radio outlets for like, well, why didn't you ask Bill why he signed Cam? Why didn't you ask Bill about Tom Brady? Why didn't you ask? Well, we didn't know how much the length of the window we had Belichick. But it turned out to be like 20 minutes, between 20 and 25 minutes. And Bill cleverly and craftily like gave these 5-minute, 10-minute long-winded answers that said nothing. My hand was raised. Only 8 people got to ask a question. And there was about 10 people, including myself, with my hand raised. You know how these Zoom things work.
Yep.
And basically, Stacey James, the PR guy, said, sorry, we didn't get to all of you. Well, but, and then we get lambasted for not asking the important questions.
Were you directed by Stacey James not to ask those questions?
No, but he kept on, he limited everyone to not ask any kind of follow-up question. So, and some people did, and that, again, added to the short window of time. And again, it just, it's not conducive to the best interview, put it that way. Not that Belichick, I mean, again, was he going to answer the question, so what'd you think about Tom Brady winning? What was he going to say? He would just look at you.
But what I think that's such a silly question anyway.
And but the important question is, what prompted you to bring Cam back?
Yep.
Right.
Right? What did you see in him last year that nobody else saw? Or something. But you could phrase it in such a way that he would probably, he'd probably want to answer the Cam question. Because, again, it reflects back on him. So
I was listening to that radio program this afternoon that you're speaking of from 2 to 6 p.m. On a certain radio station. And and you guys did kind of get lambasted. But the whole time I'm like, what, with the Brady question, it's like, what is he supposed to say? Right. What answer are you looking for? And with the Cam question, that's why a lot of people asked if Stacey James was directing it, because they were, there was concern as to, you know, what does he see in Cam? And this is the first time you've talked since week 17 of last season. So it was just,
well, I had three questions prepared. Like, I had a bunch of questions prepared, thinking, okay, if this one gets asked, then I'll go to number two. If this one gets asked, I'll go to number three. So the three questions I had, one was Cam. Two was about the offseason that we just talked about. I would have asked him, so the players came out with this statement. How did you feel about that? And where do you stand? What is your expectation? That was a second question I had, and I forget what the third one was. But again, my hand was raised. It never came to me. So I never got to ask any of those questions.
So how much harder is your job, or just the job of the media now virtually, right? Because I think as we're talking about it, a lot of the story that's been written, or that, you know, historically has been, when someone blurts out a random question, maybe Bill doesn't answer it. But it's the way he doesn't answer it that's part of the story. Now that portion, that whole dynamic is eliminated. So have you found it harder to do your job and to get the information that you need to write?
Well, just in general, yeah. And not having locker room access. Instead of cultivating relationships or being able to perhaps talk to somebody alone, one-on-one, you're on a Zoom call with 50 to 100 people. I mean, somebody asked me... A colleague asked from out of town, say, do you happen to have Cam Newton's contact information, like a phone number or email or something? And I said, well, I don't think I'm going to ask him that in a Zoom call. I mean, that's not something that you would ask a person with 50 other people on looking. I mean, those are the type of things where you try and foster a relationship. You try and gain some trust. But all of that comes with your access in the locker room. So, again, all of that is tossed out the window.
I'm telling you, I think if you had the chance to give him one of your famous apple pies, I think you'd have that contact information to disperse amongst all of us, right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know some of my secrets now, don't you?
Always come prepared. I think one of the last things that we want to talk about is Julian Edelman, right? You were on the forefront of this story about him retiring or being cut and then retiring. So I have a question, number one, just about his impact. Like, how big of an impact did Julian Edelman have in the Patriots organization?
Huge. I mean, he carried on the whole Patriots offense is predicated on as a possession offense, and at its height, it flowed through the tight end position and the slot receiver position. Going back as far as Troy Brown, Wes Welker, Brady always needed that quick outlet. And again, because he was so good at reading defenses, the quick outlet to the slot guy was one of his best options. when you have a guy as tough as and willing to go over the middle to catch those type of passes. I mean, Welker was, Edelman was, but that the tight ends, but that's all part and parcel of the offense and how it works best. And Edelman, he was good in the regular season, but he was great in the postseason. And again, having that constant, that guy that you know on third down was going to catch the pass, was going to get 7 yards on a third and six, was going to get 10 yards on a third and nine, who was always going to make the play and move the chains. That's like irreplaceable, if you ask me. So did his importance off the charts in a Patriot sense?
Yeah. And were there favors done to him by the Patriots in order for him to still collect money this upcoming year? Right. Because he still is on the books for.
Right. By giving him an injury designation, he can still collect, I think, $2 million or whatever, a majority of his salary for this season. So he was released with an injury designation. So, or his contract was terminated, whatever, however they phrased it. But the way they phrased it was beneficial to him.
It shows you what they think of him.
Yeah, exactly. And they, you know, we've seen this happen a lot around the league, but it was such a weird day, right? Because you were on the forefront of breaking that story. Then they come out that they've terminated the contract. And then within an hour, he releases this video. How long had this been known that this was going to be the path that the Patriots and Julian Edelman took?
Well, I think that going back to last year, and I think it was after the 6 week, we had the procedure done. And then toward the end of the season, there was some talk about him coming back, but he didn't. And then, I don't know, a few months ago, Ian Rappaport had a report that basically said things weren't going great, but he was still, he still wanted to give it a go. And, you know, all these months later, the knee didn't respond quite the way he was hoping from the procedure. But my information was that it was never going to fully come back. The procedures that they do might have given him some relief for a short time period, but ultimately the same problem was going to keep happening because he has basically kind of a bone-on-bone situation in his left knee. So, I mean, they'd inject lubricants and whatever to help, but ultimately there wasn't a fix for it. So with no fix, he was going to be a tough sell, not only here, but anybody else, anywhere else.
Like Tampa. Because that was the first thought we all had was, he's off to sunny South Florida, and that's where he's going to go to retire with his buddy Tom, and that'll be that. But here in that situation, I mean, we saw him play his entire career here. Some tiny quarterback out of Kent State who gets drafted in the seventh round and comes in. And
I was going to say, after the video he put out, he would piss off a lot of people. I mean, he said he wanted to retire a Patriot and end a Patriot. He was done. I've seen another outlet that basically thinks that down the road, right before the playoffs, all of a sudden he's going to Tampa's going to sign him and have him play in that short window that his knee can, you know, stand up. But again, I don't see that happening. And if I'm Scotty Miller or one of those guys in that offense, and all of a sudden they pluck up Julian Edelman in December or January.
I thought Scotty Miller kind of got the raw end of the deal when they brought AB in anyway. And then when Tom Brady threw that first half pass to him in the NFC Championship game, I was like, ah, no, never mind.
Yeah.
That relationship's good.
But what I'm saying is, I mean, Tampa, I mean, maybe all of a sudden everyone got hurt in Tampa, but you'd have to hurt quite a few guys because they're loaded, beyond loaded.
He would be the ultimate bad guy if he did that, right? Because right now, Gronk is not looked at favorably in New England because of the fact that
He retired after free agency that cost us the ability to go get Jared Cook. So when I was thinking about this, I was saying, like, these situations are very similar in the fact that Jules waited till after, but maybe the Patriots knew, right? They knew what the outcome was going to be. And then they'd already filled the holes for wide receiver. But if you release a Foxborough Forever video and then go to Tampa for November, December, January, there's no coming back from that.
Let me just flip the narrative just a little bit.
Yeah.
What if the Patriots, again, because basically convey to him, we can't carry you another year, or we can't have you. And a lot of that went into what I wrote a few weeks back. It was a tough decision for the Patriots to decide what to do with Edelman, because obviously they need to upgrade their receiving core, which they did. And this is another great, beyond great receiver draft. So where does Edelman fit? Or this guy who's basically playing on one leg. So it's also possible that the Patriots conveyed to him their thinking. And between the two sides, it was decided. Edelman sat back and said, well, do I want to do this with another team?
This is a more generalized question along those lines, because you brought up a good point that I always think about when we see and hear these situations. And there's so much that goes on behind the scenes, and you're a little bit closer to that curtain, but we have those conversations all the time. And I've had this conversation with so many people of, let's use the example of Gronk, where they end up, he comes out of retirement, they trade his rights down to Tampa, and he goes and plays for Tampa, and the rest is history. Everyone sees that as, well, the Patriots wanted to get something for him and get him off the books. I see it as, he wanted to come out and play, but he retired a year before because he didn't want to play in New England anymore. The question is, how much happens in those conversations that the public doesn't know about and just sits here and blabbers on about and get completely wrong?
A lot. The Gronk situation, the Gronk situation, to how I know it, is, so he retired, and again, he was beaten up, his body, I mean, all those things were real. But I think it was also in his mind that if Tom ever broke free and ever played and ever went somewhere else, that would be a possibility. And of course, when Tom went, he called Gronk. The thing with Gronk is he had all the leverage against the Patriots. And by that, his number against the cap, they didn't have any cap space. So if he came back, that would trigger in like a 9 or 10 million cap hit. And they didn't have that room. So there's one thing. Not that they couldn't make it.
Sure.
But again, they would have to cut some people for him to come back. Two, Gronk, they could have come back. If you said he was coming back, they could have traded him, except Gronk was only going one place. Now, the Patriots could have said, well, you can come back, but we're going to trade you. And then Gronk said, then I'm going to stay retired. So for them to get something for him, it had to be with Tampa. So he had all the leverage. And it's not like the Patriots were being nice guys.
Right.
That was their only avenue to get something in return. Either that or Gronk was just going to stay retired. And perhaps because the Patriots had his rights.
That all spawned because they tried to trade him back in June of 2018 to the Lions, right? And he said, if you trade me, I'll retire.
Correct. And he also said then, the only quarterback I'll play with is Brady.
One last question. That little scenario that you just painted about Jules going to Tampa at the right before Thanksgiving, what are the odds that he comes back here right before Thanksgiving? Would that hold true?
That could. Because he could still retire a Patriot.
Right.
I mean, that would be a lie. Like, you know?
I got the wheels turning when you said that. I'm like, well, we thought Gronk was going to do that 2 years ago before he announced his Gronk beach cruise or Super Bowl party, whatever the hell it was. But Edelman feels like the guy that would actually come back, do the Junior Seau type of season towards the end.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what was forecast with him going to Tampa, basically rehabbing or do wink, whatever he had to do to get the knee better.
Yep.
Because I think it was Mike Florio said he wouldn't be drug tested when you're retired, right?
Yeah.
So he would do whatever it is like to get his knee in the best possible condition to play. And then obviously have that short window of it holding up, basically, if it was just the postseason.
36-year-old Julian Edelman coming back. It's amazing how much goes on behind the scenes that fans think we know, because we included it. And it fascinates me how close you are to that curtain.
Well, I think he still, honest to goodness, from my information, is he definitely still wanted to play.
Right.
But perhaps when the Patriots maybe indicated that it was best for them organizationally to move on, then when he weighs his options, well, Tampa's loaded, right? And are they going to take him on with the bad knee and blah, blah, blah? So all things considered, when he finally weighed everything, retirement seemed like the best thing to do.
Two historical questions, and then we can wrap it up, Karen. Ready? Which Patriot team has been your favorite team to cover since you've been in town? And who is your favorite player of all time to cover as well?
Wow. Well, I think probably the first one, the underdog team that was Cinderella, you know, because again, it was not expected. And once things got expected, that changed the whole, you know, they were a lovable team back then. Yeah. They became to the rest of the world obnoxious, you know, everyone wanted them to lose, but it was hard that first, I mean, the snow game. I mean, I was standing in the end zone when Vinatieri hit a ball that disappeared, and I had no idea that went through the upper. I mean, I could not tell. But just that whole everything, the soup to nuts season for them, I don't know. That, to me, was my favorite. And what was the other question?
Who's your favorite player of all time that you've covered or that you've worked with the Patriots?
Oh, my goodness.
There's been a few.
Yeah. And I'd probably be stupid if I listed one. someone's going to get mad at me if I don't.
I don't want to hurt any connections. So is it okay if I just come up with one more question?
Sure. Absolutely.
What was it like in 2004, right? Or after 2004, when, like you just mentioned, everyone had already turned on the Patriots because we were a dynasty, but you're from this area and everyone here was rooting for the Red Sox and hated the Yankees because they were that dynasty, right? Mm-hmm. So what was it like having a team you cover be the team that you hated in baseball?
It was odd, and it's funny. I covered the Red Sox too when they finally beat the Yankees. So the dynamics are odd. It took a little getting used to, because it's like, it's hard when you leave the state, I mean, or listen to radio, every city you went to, I mean, there was like hatred, I mean, being spewed everywhere. And it's like, oh my gosh. But the Yankees, it's a good perspective, because they became the Yankees essentially. But I also think with them losing last year, I almost think there's a lot of the population, the haters out there, who are kind of, yeah, they had their fun moment for a minute, but then it's like, all right, well, who are we going to root against?
Yeah. You know?
So like the enemy was taken away. So I think now those people are rooting for the Patriots to come back so that they can hate them again. You know,
the Yankees had that transcendent time too after the Red Sox won that first World Series. Mm-hmm. And then it's so interesting because we talk about it as fans, right? And you mentioned from an outside perspective, unpopular opinion maybe in this area, but I think the Patriots dynasty was more hateable than the Yankees dynasty.
Why? Because of cheating scandals?
Well, I think the team, I think the Yankees team themselves, the players on the teams were more likable than the guys here.
Than the guys here? I mean, you can make the argument about...
And the coaching staff. Sorry. Coaches.
Like Joe Torre versus Bill Belichick in the press conference. It's Joe Torre.
Yeah, I agree. I think that a lot of the hatred starts at the top. And I'm not talking about Bob Kraft. I'm talking about Bill Darth Vader, you know, the man in the hood.
That's it. That's what I'm talking about.
You know, and for sure. And once the Patriots started winning, too... They did have an arrogance about them, and it didn't help. Like, if you remember the game against the Ravens in the playoffs, where Bill Olivet, they're behind, and they came back to win that game, and like Bill started having linemen catching passes and running backs ineligible, and like he was playing with the rule book. And the Ravens didn't know who to cover because they said the running back was ineligible. So they won that game. And then at the press conference after, Tom Brady made some kind of crack of, well, if they know the rule book, maybe they should study the rule book. So when you portray that kind of arrogance and stick it in the face of your opponent, that's also frowned upon.
Yeah. And I mean, they came back being down 14 twice in that game. And all people remember are that pass to the tight end, right? That he was not undeclared, and then that pressure when Brady said, "Well, it's in the rule book, so you can't be mad at us." That arrogance wasn't there in the first run, right?
Not at all.
But the hatred was still real in 04. I very much remember they were like, "Yeah, we've seen this before. Like, we don't because they had that 21 game winning streak, right, in the regular season. So by that time." Between 03 and 04, people had really gotten off the Patriots bandwagon. But
I also think that – I think the team, the Corey Dillon team, might have been like the best.
Yeah, it was a wagon.
Defensively and offensively, the best team. They had the perfect season sort of team. But that 2014 was a real wagon without question.
Well – Karen, thank you so much for joining us here. We always want to give you a time to let the listeners know where they can find you. So where can they find you on Twitter or any social media platform?
Yeah, at K Garigian. I'm also at thebostonherald.com. On there, obviously, my stuff appears on their website, but AK Garigian on Twitter. So I post most of my stuff. So
we're avid readers. That's how do you think I figured out about the apple pie thing? You and Bob Sosi. So Karen Garigian, thank you so much for taking the time for Joe Malkin, Craig D'Alessandro. I am Michael Marcangelo saying thank you so much for listening to Missing the Point, and we'll talk to you later.
Electric Acid. Welcome to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing, where we harmonize your mind, body, and soul. I'm Amanda, your sound therapy expert.
And I'm Stephen, the curious explorer uncovering the mysteries of sound.
Together, we explore vibrations, frequencies, and the power of sound therapy and tuning forks.
Discover ancient wisdom, reduce stress, and tune into a healthier life. Subscribe to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing today.
Mile, are you ready to record our promo for season 2 of the Wannabet podcast?
David, have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Miles, we're not here to quote lines from Airplane. We're here to tell people that season 2 starts August 18th.
But I like Airplane.
I know you do, but Wannabet is a sports betting podcast. Each week we bet $1,000 on the NFL teams and games that we love.
Well, that sounds like fun.
It is fun. And last year you picked over 60% of your games correctly.
How'd you do?
We're not talking about that. We are telling people that they can find us every Friday. So no more movie quotes.
Roger, roger.
Electric acid. Electric acid.